What's up, guys? You almost made it to episode 6. While listening to this new episode, you will maybe notice that the sound quality is not as crisp and high as you might be used to. Apologies for that. We hope that you can still enjoy the podcast and will be highly inspired by our conversation. So thanks again for tuning in and have fun.
Purpose Projects.
Welcome to another new episode of Purpose Projects, the podcast where we get to know people and businesses who are doing what they're doing for a greater purpose. And a big hello as always to Moritz also, who I'm sure is as excited as I am for today's podcast. Am I right, Moritz?
Hey, Boris. Yeah, you're right. We're really lucky to have another international Purpose Project here on our podcast. And I think this time it's your honor to introduce our guest.
Thanks for the honor, Moritz. In this episode, we have another great guest who's tackling a global problem with her company. Spoiler alert, this episode will be all about green electricity. The startup company EcoWave Power was founded in 2011 in Tel Aviv, Israel, and has developed a technology for turning waves into green electricity. To give us insights about their mission and purpose, we invited Inna Braverman, co-founder and CEO of EcoWave Power. Inna is an entrepreneur who fights for a sustainable world and has won a huge amount of awards. For example, Wired magazine mentioned her as female changing the world. Welcome to our podcast, Inna.
Thank you very much. I'm very glad to be here.
Inna, before we talk about EcoWave Power and your startup company, let's talk a little bit more about yourself and in more personal terms, maybe. You have an incredible path, actually, which led you to where you are today and right now. Can you maybe tell us, and our listeners, of course, about the path that you took and the specific role that also the Chernobyl disaster has played in it?
I currently live in Israel, but I wasn't born here. I was born in Ukraine in 1986. 2 weeks after I was born, the Chernobyl nuclear reactor exploded, which caused the worst in history, a nuclear disaster in terms of cost and casualties. I was one of the babies that got hurt from the negative effects of the explosion. I actually had a respiratory arrest and a clinical death. Basically, my mother approached my crib and she looked down and she saw I was pale and blue and not breathing. And she's really freaked out. She forgot she's a nurse from the stress. She ran to my dad and she said, like, oh my God, the baby is dead. What do I do? And my dad had to really shake her physically back into conscience and tell her, like, you're a nurse, do something. And then she gave me a mouth-to-mouth resuscitation, which saved my life until the ambulance came. And actually, growing up with such a background story and hearing this kind of story from my parents and other relatives, it's a bit of a miracle. You feel like you got a second chance in life, which I don't think that most people get to grow up with such a unique feeling. And when you get a second chance in life, you really want to do something good with it. And that's kind of, I think, a big part of my drive and passion towards transforming the world into more renewable energy and safe type of energy.
So this incident in Chernobyl, or even precisely this disaster of Chernobyl, somehow led you all the way to Israel. How come Israel? From Ukraine, that's quite a trip.
Because we're Jewish as a family, and the Jewish people always dreamt to have their own country. And my family always heard about Israel from friends that left or from other family members that left before us. But my mom and dad were quite happy in Ukraine. They were having good positions and good, workplaces and so on. And I think what really pushed for the move was the Chernobyl explosion, when my mother saw that, except the very unpleasant incident that happened to me as a child, we kept being very weak and very sick babies, both me and my sister. We were always not feeling well and had different, like, very strange phenomena. And my mother really wanted to take us out. And really, the country that we always heard about was Israel. And like a year or 2 years after we left, the change of scenery really made a difference. And both my sister and I started feeling much better and doing much better, which proved that it was the right choice to do.
Okay, so you don't have any symptoms left. That's good to hear. That's good. Yeah, it's incredible for Boris and me. We weren't even born in 1986, so we're still too young. So we're more of that generation of who have heard of Chernobyl and are kind of scared of Chernobyl, even of the word. Now the Netflix series is out and all that stuff. Yeah, but we don't have that type of relationship, of course, like you do. But now, you took things in your own hands and said you want to make change. So for people who have no idea about electricity, maybe even, how does it work? So what does EcoWave Power do?
So we came up with a unique patented technology where we attach floaters to existing structures such as piers, breakwaters, jetties, and other types of marine structures. The floaters are going up and down with the movement of the waves, and they're pushing hydro cylinders, which transmit biodegradable fluid into land-located accumulators. A pressure in the accumulators is being built, which is used to turn the hydro motor, turn in a generator, and sending the clean electricity to the grid via an inverter. Now, the system is also very smart in the way that when the waves are too high for the system to handle, the floaters automatically lift above the water level and they stay in the upward position until the storm passes. Only when it passes, the floaters resume operation. So this is how we prevent any damages from storm occurring to the system.
So you yourself, let's talk a little bit more personally about your more personal path to what you do today. In 2010, you graduated from the University of Haifa in political science and English language, also with a literature major. So how does one study or go to university studying that come to making a head start into co-founding a renewable energy company?
I guess there's no real direct connection between political science and English language and literature. But I think I went from the start to study political science specifically. As I said, I always grew up with the feeling that I want to do something different. I want to do something special that would influence the world in a positive way. And, you know, as a child or as a student, even growing up, I thought that the best way to do it is through politics. Because there are, I guess, some amazing politicians that are really making a change. And that's kind of the path that I thought that I will take. When I finished university, as many young students, when they finish university, were kind of lost. I didn't have Benjamin Netanyahu, our prime minister, knocking on my door and saying, "Hi, will you come to my party?" So that wasn't really a legitimate dream at that point. I also grew up in a very, very small city in Israel called Akko. So you don't really have the right connections in order to, you know, go to politics right straight from university. So what I did is, of course, you know, I was older now, I finished university, I needed to get a job. And there's a popular website for job search in Israel, and I saw an ad for a Hebrew-English translator in a renewable energy company. And that's how I kind of got familiar with renewable energy. I found out about solar and about wind energy and tidal energy and wave energy, of course. And why wave energy kind of drew all of my attention is because it felt really special. I read a lot about it, I researched a lot, and I saw that there were hundreds of companies all around the world trying to develop a commercially viable wave energy technology, and everybody are failing. Some companies raise hundreds of millions of dollars, and still they're building the power station, and either it's too expensive, or it's too expensive and it breaks down, because most of the companies were building it in the offshore, many kilometers into the sea, so you need ships, you need divers, you have very big storms. So there were a lot of difficulties. And being an Israeli, I guess, by that point, with an Israeli chutzpah, I said, okay, all these people, they have money, they have the connection, they have the technical background, they can do it, but me, for sure I can do it. And I guess it's a bit, maybe not even chutzpah, maybe it's a bit the naiveness, the innocence that you have when you're very young, and you believe that you can do anything and nothing can stop you. You're still not impacted by the world's you know, influences. And I started really researching it and seeing where other companies fail, and came up with some of my own ideas. Of course, not in the practical level, but in the theoretical level. But I couldn't do anything with it because, as we said, like, developing a power station requires a lot of financial resources and other technical resources, of course, and so on. And at that point, I guess I got lucky because I went to a social event and I met there David Lev, my business partner, who's a serial entrepreneur. And he actually has real estate all over the world. And one of his real estate developments is a surf camp, a surf hotel in Panama. And even before we met, he was there while they're doing renovation in the surf camp, and he was watching the power of the waves and also thinking that, wow, wave energy, something should be done, and researching it. So when we met and kind of found out that both of our passion is wave energy, you know, the spark was created and Eco Wave Power was born. So I guess it's a bit of believing in yourself together with being in the right place in the right time.
Earlier you mentioned floaters that are onshore, so they're not in the ocean miles away, but they're really at the shore. What's the difference, or why do you have an advantage with waves?
First of all, the floaters are not on the shoreline. We never occupy the beaches and the coastline where people tan and use for activities. That's not our goal. What we are doing, we're connecting to existing man-made structures, like cement structures and stone-made structures, like breakwaters. The breakwaters are not prime real estate. They're not being used for anything other than breaking the waves. And the floaters are being placed on the external side of the breakwater, so the people that, even if people are tanning on the beach, they will not even see the floaters. So it doesn't even have a visual impact. And a very important thing is that these breakwaters and piers and jetties that the government and the municipalities are building, they're building it to protect the coastal population from storms. But actually, these structures are a bit damaging to the environment because they're changing the ecological balance, right? The cement wall shouldn't be in the middle of the water. So we're taking something that is damaging to the environment but has to be there for protection purposes, and we're turning it into a source of clean electricity. So that's definitely a plus in our technology. And what's good in wave energy, or like you said, what's better in wave energy than solar or wind? So first of all, I wouldn't say better, because I do think that the solution for the world is integrating all sources. So solar, wind, wave, tidal, any type of renewable energy should be implemented in order to reach a 100% environmentally friendly world. The benefits, the advantages of wave energy is that in suitable location it can be harnessed 24/7. For example, solar energy in Israel is an amazing source. We're a very sunny country, but at night you cannot produce anything, or when there's cloud coverage or pollution like in China, the production stops, which is not so good. With wind energy, it's mostly common very early in the morning or very late at night, which is not necessarily when the population is using this source. Again, with wave energy, you can have some better forecasting ability and some better stability, especially in a suitable location. An additional advantage is that wave energy, the water, is about 800 times more dense than air. So you can produce much larger electricity amounts with much smaller devices. And smaller devices mean less spaces, less costs, and so on. So it has clear advantages, and even according to the World Energy Council, wave energy can produce at least twice the amount of energy that the world produces today, which is very, very significant amount. Remember that most of the world is our seas and oceans, so we definitely should harness and take seriously this kind of source.
So you already mentioned that you see the solution for the whole world, so to say, in combining all of those renewable energy powers, solar, wind, and wave energy. So you don't see them really as competition, but you want to integrate them. How difficult it might be then to, for example, convince state officials or municipalities, as you just mentioned, to give sort of a chance to your technology to be installed. How does the process exactly look? Is it difficult or is it rather easy, depending on where you want to install these wave power installations?
Actually, you don't need a lot of convincing. I think that nowadays, and with the growing awareness to the negative effects of climate change on our world and on our planet, even emphasized more by the coronavirus that actually caused some clean skies in China and clear water in Venice, I think there is a growing awareness and importance to renewable energy. And I do think that most of the world right now has a consensus that wave energy will become an integral part of the solution to the problem. So most of governments, islands, coastal cities, ports, marinas that are interested in wave energy are contacting us directly. So,
like, so you're the attractor now on the market. That's good news. Good to hear.
Every good news and bad news. Because wave energy in general, not specifically our technology, but in general, is a new technology, although the technology is there and the government's interest and the municipality's interest is there, we are missing the thread to connect between the technology and this level of interest. So there needs to be policies in place. There needs to be legal frameworks, feed-in tariffs, other types of legislative tools in place in order for the city to be able to get from the point I really like it and I want it to the point of I actually have it installed and it received all the licenses and the approval. And I feel that that's kind of the biggest barrier right now to a wide commercialization is the fact that it's a very, very new type of technology, and I don't think that the readiness is in as advanced phase as the technology and as the interest level.
So you're basically saying that Benjamin Netanyahu has still a lot of work to do, right?
Everybody, not only Benjamin Netanyahu.
Not only him, yeah, for sure.
So you launched your first project in Israel, right? And a lot has happened since. Why don't you tell us and our listeners what milestones you've already achieved?
Actually, the first testing that we did was in a wave pool in Ukraine, in the Hydromechanical Institute. And then we made our first real condition testing in the Crimean Peninsula, which is a unique place that is a lot on the news these days, unfortunately. Then we received the approval to move it to Jaffa Port here in Israel in 2014. And we moved it and started operating it as an off-grid power station because there were no proceedings or there was no examples of any wave energy device in Israel that ever connected to the grid. So it takes time to achieve it. The first location where we actually connected to the grid was in 2016 in Gibraltar, where we have a power station that is operating ever since. And recently we received the approval from the chief scientist, approval as pioneering technology and funding as part of this approval, to expand the power station and to connect it to the grid. We're doing it in collaboration with Siemens as technical partner and with EDF Renewables IL, which is a subsidiary of the French National Electrical Company. So we're doing it with very strong strategic partners. And this is the first time in the history of Israel that wave energy will officially connect to the grid. So people will have their washing machine or TV actually operated by the power of the waves, which is kind of cool. We're looking forward to open the power station here in Israel in a few months and then start spreading it all over the world.
That sounds really awesome, actually. You just mentioned that 2016 in Gibraltar was your first, like, basically installed technology that was getting used. Yeah. You have also projects in Portugal and Mexico pending. How does your business model as such work, and how do you actually generate revenue?
We have a number of business models that we operate according to the location. Sometimes we do turnkey projects, which means that we build the project and then we transfer it. We sell the project as is to the client. We also have BOO and BOT, means build, own and operate. When we actually invest in the project, we hold the project as our asset, and we're selling the electricity to the electrical company or the energy ministry according to the laws of the country, and then making our money back or our revenues from the electricity sale. And in some cases, you have a structure that is called DOT, when you build it, operate it, and then transfer it. So sometimes the client, in order to have certainty in the technology, especially when you're a new technology, they want to eliminate any operational risk. So they wait until you build it, you operate it for 1 year or 2 years, they're seeing all the data, and then you will be able to transfer, sell actually the project.
That's quite complex. To get more into easy topics again, how many employees does EcoWave Power have?
Right now, we have about 17 employees.
Okay. And with those 17 people, with your core team, what role does purpose play?
Wow, I think a very, very important role. I think that the whole company and the whole idea of the company is very much purpose-driven. My team that sits here in the office, if it's the marketing department, they know that every email that they send or every phone call or Zoom call nowadays that they take is basically, you know, is a milestone in their way of really changing the world. They feel that they're doing something important. So it's the engineering team, every sketch that they make, every upgrade, every improvement is really something meaningful, because in the long run, this technology will become as big as solar, as wind, and maybe even bigger. So it will become a big part of the solution to the world's problems that the world is facing today. So I think that purpose is definitely kind of the motto in the company.
So purpose also really seems to be, yeah, like you just said, the motto in Israel in general. That's at least the sense we get from afar. Founded only about, 75 years ago, Israel today is actually known as the startup nation, or even, a second Silicon Valley, as you might call it. The country itself holds the world record actually in startups per capita, about 6,500 or 7,000, with only 8.5 million people living there. Tel Aviv, especially, where your guys' headquarters are, is known as the innovation and founders capital. Why do you think that is?
Why Israel or why Tel Aviv?
You can say both.
I think that Israel is a country that is very uniquely positioned. Like, it kind of has all the difficulties possible. We have shortage of everything. So when the country just in 1948, when they just established the country, we had a big lack of water. The country was a desert, so nothing would grow on this type of land. So that's why Israel became very strong in agriculture, because they had to come up with new and innovative way on how to grow the vegetables and the fruit and so on. If not, then people would just have nothing here. It would continue being a desert. They had to come out with the desalination, because we have a shortage of water. It's a very small country and we don't have enough, so we have to desalinate. The country basically kind of didn't have anything, so it had to develop everything independently. Plus, I think also the people are a bit courageous, because in order to open a startup, you know, it's a bit scary, especially when you're young and inexperienced. Even if you're not young, if you're just inexperienced, it's a bit scary to open a company just like one day to say, okay, I'm going to do it. Most people don't come with appropriate background or connections or money and so on. So it is a big leap of faith. And I think that people in Israel have a tendency to live like there's no tomorrow. Because of the sometimes security difficulties that we have from neighboring countries, people are saying, okay, I have to do it today. Who knows what will happen tomorrow? And this kind of drive makes them very courageous. They don't miss opportunities. So I think that sometimes, you know, you can turn the lemon into a lemonade, and I think that's kind of what the Israelis did. They had very difficult conditions, and we turned it into something that can be good.
And especially you as a female entrepreneur, can you maybe give some insights on female entrepreneurship in Israel? Is it different to European or American culture?
Different in what way? In Israel and in the rest of the world, female entrepreneurs are very much underrepresented. Right now in the world, only 17% of all employees in tech companies are women. 17. Only 1% of the women in the world are in leadership positions in tech companies, which is horrible. It means 99% are not women. So I do think there's a lot of room for a change. I do think that women have a lot to contribute, especially given the fact that according to the United Nations, the population sectors that get hurt the most from climate change, from the negative events that are happening, are women and children. So I do think that women definitely have to be a part of the negotiation and have to have a seat at the table where the negotiation is happening. And unfortunately, right now, this is not the case.
Yeah, it's the same here in Germany, I think. I don't know the numbers, but especially, it's a very male-dominated business world in general and also in the startup world. So I know that in our research, Boris and I said, you don't only have one purpose of making solar or making renewable energy as a purpose, but also female entrepreneurship. You also had a TED talk that was actually in Germany, right?
Yeah, in Frankfurt.
Yeah, on that topic, that was really inspiring. Let's maybe switch the gears and. We're talking about cultural changes. Fridays for Future is a huge topic here in Germany and has changed a lot of ways, especially people, but also businesses are acting. Is it also a topic in Israel?
During regular times, not Corona time? Yes, of course. It is a movement that really caught attention of many people all over the world, and Israel is not different. People here really care about the environment, really care about the kind of the destiny of their future generation, because they understand that what they're going to do now will impact the world in the future. So I do think that there is a growing awareness everywhere in the world and in Israel as well.
Is it actually just maybe sort of a fun question? Is it then actually, would it be called different in Israel due to Shabbat, not Fridays for Future, but something else? Or
because the Shabbat comes in depending on winter or summer, but it's about 7 p.m. So they can do their Friday for Future during the day and then at night to go do Shabbat. So that's still okay.
Perfect combination. Moritz just mentioned Fridays for Future and the general maybe shift in the culture as well. It seems to us, especially startups in today's world, seem to be at the center of these purpose-driven agendas that you yourself just mentioned having in your company. How important do you think is the energy sector, especially in achieving a more sustainable world?
Very important, because 60% of the greenhouse gas emissions in the world are being caused by the way that we harness our energy as we speak. Right now, about 80 to 82% of the world's energy is being produced by polluting sources such as coal, oil, and so on. So we definitely have to reverse this trend in order to achieve a clean world and to minimize the pollution.
Do you have any specific goals with EcoWave Power? So how many, for example, megawatt do you want to create in the next 5 years?
So basically, the big goal is be installed everywhere in the world where there is a breakwater, a pier, and a jetty, or any type, you know, of a suitable structure. Because as I said before, these structures are there. They're not being used for anything. So just connecting floaters to their external side, and you can harness clean electricity. That's an amazing usage of something that is not currently being used. Even farther into the future, I would like to see wave energy becoming a standard. You know, right now, when people visit our power stations or hear about us in a podcast or in the news, they're like, wow, wave energy, I never heard about it. So, you know, it's nice to hear, but that's not a good thing. It means that it's still not standardized. And that's where we want to be. We want to be that. Imagine that every new breakwater or pier or jetty that is being built in the world will have to incorporate wave energy by law. then you don't have to do it after and do all the studies to make sure that it can withstand the loads of the floater and so on. You just do it together as you're building the structure itself. And you get both protection from the waves to the coastal population or to the ports and clean electricity. That could be amazing. And that's the point that I would like to achieve with EcoWave Power.
Maybe adding on to that, we don't want to bore our listeners with nerd energy knowledge, but in a recently published report by the IEA, the International Energy Agency, they, in terms of the corona crisis, they published a sustainable recovery report, that's what it's called, that suggests basically that the energy sector, particularly electricity, has played a pretty much critical role in the global response to the COVID-19 crisis. And I would like to read you a quote that I read there, and just would like to know your opinion on it. Governments have a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity to reboot their economies and bring a wave of new employment opportunities while accelerating the shift to a more resilient and cleaner energy future. Would you agree with that assessment?
100% agree.
Okay, then we can stop our podcast now, Boris.
Okay, perfect.
No, sorry.
It will become a big new industry, and the big new industry will also provide significant employment opportunities and significant export opportunities for the countries. For example, every country where we build a power station, that's where we build the floaters and all the heavy machinery, which does significantly assist in creating additional jobs, additional experience to, I guess he didn't stop there. No.
Yeah, for all the listeners who are always getting the notifications of Inna's email inbox, we just had that technical issue before recording. It's still there. It doesn't matter.
Well, at least they know that I'm busy, that they get a lot of emails.
Yes, she's a busy entrepreneur.
No, but as I said, it will provide significant employment. I think in the U.S. right now, the fastest growing opportunities for employment are with the solar and the wind industry. So it's definitely a good example to see what can happen with wave energy as well.
Yeah, especially now the European Union even granted, I think, a 750 billion euro stimulus package to finance more companies or more economies who are in this sector. So I'm really excited to see if EcoWave Power can maybe even benefit off of that. We hope so, definitely. Maybe as a last question, we ask this question to all our guests. Who is your role model, or who is your business who you look up to and get inspired by?
I guess many role models. I really like the story of Jack Ma, the entrepreneur behind Alibaba. He's not really connected to sustainability, but I really like his personal story. As you probably know, he comes from a very kind of simple origin. He tried to enroll into Harvard like 10 times and got rejected. And he tried to get a job at KFC selling chicken, fried chicken, and he wasn't accepted. And then, taking all this negative experience that he had, because it's not very positive not being able to get into selling chicken, and to become one of the most successful entrepreneurs in the world, I find it very admirable. And he also retired recently from Alibaba, and he said that his passion is actually going back to what he did before he became an entrepreneur, and it is being a school teacher. He used to teach elementary school, if I'm not wrong. So that's kind of humbling to see that the person reached such a big success, although nobody believed he could. And even when you reach such success, his desire is still to teach children. So I really like his personal story.
Thank you very much, Inna. That was very interesting for us to hear about your purpose project. Thanks for spreading the word of purpose, also of renewable energies and female entrepreneurship. It was really nice having you here.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you, Inna. Greetings to Israel.
Thank you.
Boris, schon wieder einen tollen Gast im Podcast gehabt. Wie fandest du es?
Ich fand's mega. Ja, noch mehr international wird schwierig, glaube ich. Also außer er kommt von noch weiter weg. Also Vancouver hatten wir ja schon. Aber
Holland hatten wir auch.
Gut, Holland ist ja quasi der kleine Nachbar von uns. Nee, aber Israel, mega, mega interessant. Also das Projekt an sich auch. Und ich glaube, auch nochmal was ganz anderes, als wenn man so traditionell vielleicht an Purpose denkt oder zumindest die Folgen, die wir davor hatten, war das Thema Purpose war quasi fast dasselbe, aber ein komplett anderer Bereich, also Energieversorgung und Stromerzeugung ja quasi. Glaube ich, denken die wenigsten da dran und wir hoffen, dass der Zusammenhang zwischen Purpose und dem deutlich geworden ist. Ich fand schon.
Ich habe mich auch tatsächlich ein bisschen ertappt gefühlt, als sie gesagt hat, die Leute denken nie an Wave Power, wenn sie an Renewable Energies denken. Das stimmt.
Ja, also stimmt auch.
Auch als du Eco Wave Power vorgeschlagen hast, dass wir Inna einladen, war mir das bis zu dem Zeitpunkt ehrlicherweise gar nicht bewusst, dass man aus Wellen Elektrizität gewinnen kann. Und ich kann nur jedem empfehlen, der diesen Podcast gehört hat, sich das wirklich mal als Video auch anzuschauen, wie diese Floater aussehen. Also sind wirklich wie Bojen, die vorne ja an so einen Zementblock, die da ins Wasser reingehen, was sie erklärt hat, einfach daher dranhängen und die ganze Zeit hoch und runter gehen.
Also eigentlich ein total simples mechanisches Verfahren, ne, wenn man das einfach mal so anguckt. Also die hängen einfach ins Wasser und dann die Wellen, die halt niemals aufhören, an Land zu schlagen oder so. Und dann wird dann halt einfach Strom erzeugt. So.
Das also Hightech ist es nicht, das stimmt, aber die Idee ist einfach so gut und so einfach. Und sie sagt ja selber auch efficient, also low cost.
Ja, absolut.
Ich glaube, vor allem, das sind dann auch die Argumente, die man dann auch braucht, um solche Projekte durchzusetzen. Ich bin aber gespannt, wie viele Kunden, also beziehungsweise wie viele Länder, die jetzt noch überzeugen wird in den nächsten Jahren. Man hat ja schon so rausgehört, dass es ja auch ein sehr bürokratischer Weg ist, bis man wirklich der Zuschlag auch kommt. Aber vielleicht ändert sich das jetzt ja natürlich auch in den nächsten Jahren.
Ja, absolut. Also in unserer Recherche vor allem haben wir auch gesehen, dass solche Ansätze immer mal wieder gibt oder gegeben hat, aber das halt noch nicht in so einem Stil, relativ größeren Stil schon stattfindet. So. Und sie hat uns auch, glaube ich, deutlich gut erklärt, warum das so ist. Und die mit EcoWave Power sind das schon, glaube ich, auf jeden Fall, gehen da schon in die richtige Richtung, das auf jeden Fall größer skalieren zu können, über kurz oder lang.
Du sagst es. Hoffentlich. Also ich habe eine Menge gelernt, Boris. Ich glaube, du auch. Und absolut. Ich hoffe, alle Zuhörer und Zuhörerinnen geht es genauso. Inna war ein super Gast, sehr inspirierende Persönlichkeit, die sich sehr viel einsetzt für unsere Umwelt, aber auch für Female Entrepreneurship. Ich freue mich auf die nächste Folge, Boris. An alle Zuhörer, die jetzt immer noch hören, bitte abonniert uns und teilt die Folge natürlich mit euren Freunden. Und dann sehen wir uns oder beziehungsweise hören wir uns schon in der nächsten Folge wieder in 2 Wochen.
Ja, absolut. Folgt uns, abonniert uns. Ich kann Moritz nochmal nur recht geben und wiederholen. Teilt uns und unsere Folgen, unsere Stories, was auch immer. Sagt es euren Freunden, Eltern, Omas, Opas weiter. Also natürlich nur, wenn es euch gefällt. Wenn es euch nicht gefällt, könnt ihr uns natürlich auch sehr, sehr gerne Feedback geben und sagen, was wir besser machen können. Also wir trachten nicht nur nach Lob, sondern auch sehr nach konstruktiver Kritik. Sind wir für alles offen. Ja. Und wir freuen uns natürlich auf die nächste Folge.
Du sagst es. Bis dann.
Ciao zusammen.